you in the RTMC is that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We hope Honorable Chair is not a train coming to smash us, but it is us in search for a better future going ahead. Our problem statement that we have, not knowing whether actually the mandate is set out in the RTMC Act deals with the issues that we need to deal with. Our Act seems to be much more fascinated with intergovernmental relations more than what we should be looking at, which are road deaths and road injuries. To put a context to this, Honorable Chair, we don't know how many people get injured in South African roads because we don't keep that statistic. Now you're going to see figures and you're going to ask yourself where the figures are coming from. They're all over the show. We then pick them up from other people. But our view, certainly in the RTMC, is that we should be looking at this much more closer and focusing on it so that we can understand the impact these two things are having in the South African economy and South Africa as a whole. Because we also believe that safe and secure roads are a public good that must be consumed by all South Africans. Our challenge is much more pronounced. Lack of controls at the RTMC. Weak management structures. Lack of focus on core business, lack of funding. We are sitting 73 million. We need to double our budget to even start to work and do what we need to be doing. And as we said, the cooperation from other spheres of government creates a problem because we need clarity in terms of mandate of the RTMC. Our turnaround plan is quite a simple one. In the short term, we need to be reinstating management and governance structures. They are almost non-existent in the RTMC. Introducing financial and operational controls, cash management and cost containment, ensuring statutory compliance and refocusing on core business, which is making our roads safe. And that we can only do by preventing accidents instead of investigating them while they've already happened. Our challenges are mainly on road safety. As I said, it is a public good that every South African must enjoy. The safety level in South Africa is unsatisfactory and, in our view, unacceptable. There is just a continuous lack of compliance on our road. And we have to emphasize the fact that minimal law enforcement has been done on moving violations, while our research indicates that in the main we lose people on head-on collisions and all those things that are created also by moving violations. The cause of accidents, we should say that it amounts to billions of rands, because the current, I think the AA released a figure of in the 90 billions. And that does not just take the miserable pain and suffering when someone loses a loved one on the road. Road crashes in South Africa, they are the seventh largest contributor to deaths in SA. More comparable with the developing countries, but it not look like we have got a grip on it, because the World Bank suggests that in 2020 it's going to be the second killer in South Africa. Currently, we are losing 14,000 people annually. pedestrian, an average of 38 per day. This is calculated on a 7-day methodology. If we are to move to the methodology of taking 30 days, we can almost see this number doubling. In addition, around 7,500 road users annually left permanently disabled. 60,000 are seriously injured and around 160,000 slightly injured. As I said, we don't keep the stats, so we have managed to get all these things from different people, be road accident funds and other people that keep the stats. So we wouldn't have got those people who did not claim from the fund and other things. Really, what are the causes of this? Lack of adherence to traffic laws, impunity that seems to permeate itself on our roads. People are still drinking and driving. They are still speeding. They are still overtaking on barrier lines. And they think an amber robot means speed before it closes. Low-skilled drivers. When we did a comparison all over the world, best drivers are starting to be trained at least 16 years of age. In South Africa, the average driver, first time, 25 years. We don't have a probation for drivers. And our PRDP requirements need to be looked at, because what we do, we test people's eyes and we check whether they've got a criminal record or not, and then we give them a professional driver's permit. In fact, what we have seen is that Zimbabwe is doing it even much better than us, because you have got to get an advanced driver's course before you can get a professional driver's permit. Statistics. As we say, very difficult to compare ourselves with other nations where we are at 7 days and they are at 30 days. They are even the Moscow Convention last year, the declaration is talking about moving to 30 days, which is what we are doing. And in a way, they are also not reliable and they are incomplete in the sense that we don't know how many people are injured on our roads on a yearly basis. Unsafe infrastructure. The decaying of the infrastructure has led to a couple of things, but in the main, what we are seeing is the lack of maintenance of our road signage that is creating a problem for us as we move. And the other issue is that there are areas where we know these are death roads, as we call them. As we make investigations, we come with recommendations that are hardly ever implemented by anyone, and we don't have any other way to deal with these issues. Unroadworthy vehicles, mainly public vehicles, brakes and tires and lights worn out. When we did the pre-Easter campaign, we went and we targeted public transport vehicles, mainly buses. We took them off, we tested them for roadworthiness. 90% of them failed the roadworthy test. And this was just only in the area of Johannesburg. If we were to take this and extrapolate that, it tells us a story of what then happened. Now that I've given a view of where we are and where we want to go, the interventions to us are quite simplistic. We try to simplify them. We need to increase the skill of a South African driver. And we are saying the fascination with side parking, really, when someone has never been killed from someone side parking, is still puzzling us. We need to move away from that. So in a way, we need to go and review the K53, review the PRDP requirements. In line with that, we're also trying to develop a unit standard for drivers in South Africa through what we call the National Traffic Training Framework that we are going to be releasing quite soon. And we would like to work together with private sector on this to see how we profile our drivers going forward and the kind of incentives that people should get should they get advanced driving. Educational intervention. There was a movement away from what is called junior traffic centers. When I grew up in the township of Sheo, used to have all these road signs in the playground and all those things, and you knew when to stop and do all those things and yield and do all those things, when to cross the road and how to cross it. Those things have been removed, and we want them back. We are working together with the private sector to make sure that we are having that. In fact, the RTMC Exco is building one in a school that we have adopted next to our offices there. We hope that we're going to be able to roll this thing out as a basic requirement. And from there, that would be for primary schools. At the level of a high school, we have got these debate competitions that are third grade 10 and 11 that talks about issues of road safety and the likes. But we are also introducing a learner's license at high school level. We have got an MOU currently with the Department of Basic Education. Our view is to incorporate the learner's license as part of life orientation. The minister has also asked us to look at whether we cannot get a tertiary education as a basic that people must have a driver's license as well. The driver of the air competition, it has been there, but what we are doing, we are changing it. We are designing it to be a competition that must enhance the skills of drivers, but also reward the drivers that have behaved well on our road. So, as part of the next year intake, for people who are going to be in driver of the year, it must be people with a history of being better drivers on the road, meaning that they would have the lower infringement if they have any at all. The next one, we then want what we call targeted law enforcement. We in the RTMC are saying the era of when South African traffic law enforcement officers were called traffic cops or speed cops is over. Because we need to understand what we are trying to enforce. We must enforce things that would help us reduce the carnage on our roads and the things that lead to more of our people losing their lives on the road. Road safety engineering. Now, if you were looking at the rail sector, the rail safety regulator can actually go and close the line and say this is not conducive to safety issues. The RTMC can't do that. We see roads that are an accident waiting to happen, where we have told people for years that, guys, we have recommended that you do this and that on the road, and people haven't done it. And we also need to also say, in the area where a road is being engineered, especially these roads that go past the mushrooming of a lot of informal settlements around the highways, and the question is how do we incorporate safety into those aspects of things. So we need to move in that direction, and that's what we are doing. We are talking to Sandra, we are talking to everyone. We believe that we are the agency that must set safety standards on the engineering side of this. On the ARTO side, this has to work. We need to be able in South Africa to profile a driver as a reckless driver or a better driver. It needs to happen. What we say is a simplistic thing. People say, we are saying that a driver's license is not a right. It's not like your birth certificate. How you get it is that you firstly have got to get a learner's, and we hope that you know all this science and the rules that govern the roads, and then you then go through a process of being a learner driver where you learn and then you get your license. And you still go and think that amber means you must speed, so take that license. There's no other way of dealing with these things. People must know that they are going to lose that. And once they know those things, they would understand. We'll deal with this issue, Madam Chair, later on in more detail. There is, apologies, we have just put this thing into an abbreviation. It means the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code. The National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code is meant to govern the officers on our roads. We need to know what they are policing, because when we go to certain authorities, you find they have a lot of people. However, 98% of their enforcement is on speed and 2% on everything else, and when you really check, it is parking. Now, that tells you that people are enforcing for the sake of making money and not for the sake of making our road safe. And for us, the fascination is road safety, road safety, road safety. In fact, in the RTMC, what we have adopted as a slogan, when you get to EXCO, we discuss and you say, I've got a project. We say, how is it going to reduce the carnages? Because if indeed it doesn't do that, then it's not what we are supposed to be doing. We are refocusing on our core mandate. The other aspect of it is that because, you know, traffic fines are all these things and that people drink and drive and do all those things, our courts do not seem to hold seriously these issues around traffic and traffic law violations as a serious matter. Our view is that we need dedicated courts to do those things. It has worked during the World Cup. We don't see why it can't work in this case, and we think that it will be a speedy resolution of this. The National Law Enforcement Unit, we need to augment the capacity that we have on our roads. And to that effect, Madam Chair, we have got 260 trainees that are already in training. We are going to train them in other, they are going to be some sort of a special force for intervention at the national level to assist the local guys, to assist the provincial guys in making sure that our roads are safe. In fact, it becomes more pronounced by the fact that our provincial traffic law enforcers are not declared as essential service. And therefore, in the morning when you actually go, when they are supposed to be controlling traffic, they are also in traffic going to work. And at 4 o'clock when you go home, when they are supposed to be enforcing, they are also driving back home, so they are part of the traffic. So we are saying that other aspect of it, that we are introducing this law enforcement unit that will be declared an essential service as it starts to work, so that we deal with these issues going forward. The time for partnerships cannot be more pronounced than now. RTMC seemed to be in a space where we never wanted to share anything with anyone. Even where people are better at doing things, we just thought we wanted to do them ourselves, and it created a problem. So we are forming partnerships, we have formed partnerships with the private and public sector and our sister agencies like RAF and, as Mr. Kumalo said it, the CBRTA, so that we can get areas of collaboration where we can work together without necessarily having to reinvent the wheel. Much more pronounced and much more in detail is the data that we need. We need to improve the collection, management, and the use of data on road deaths and injuries so that we can formulate what we call evidence-based interventions. Like we said, targeted interventions or law enforcement, and those other issues must tell us how we are going to review the K53. K53 must be reviewed based on data so that we can be able to say these are the areas where we need to enhance and tighten the competence, and that was the driver. On the internal arrangement, we need power. We just don't have any. In fact, previously we kept on saying, how do you really do law enforcement by coordination? And it becomes difficult to coordinate law enforcers where every law enforcement in anywhere else comes from a command base. We need to deal with that. But of course, we need financial resources to be able to do that. And I must emphasize that we need appropriately trained personnel for us to be able to achieve these objectives and that. We are busy trying to do that. We are working hard as the EXCO and the department to try and get people to help us achieve our mandate. We think we are on good course. We do not think that we are there yet. But certainly, Chair, we can say we are 50% there. I'm sure that in the next time we sit in front of you, we would have achieved a lot of things. Quite importantly, Chair, where you don't have a command structure, it becomes important that we deal with this issue of corruption in this sector. We are the most corrupt. In fact, anyone can tell you, wherever anyone has paid a bribe in this country, it's to a traffic office. Now there's something that needs to happen. You know, to a point where Nando's had an advert that shows you are handsome, you are also beautiful at the same time, meaning the person is holding on to a wrong driver's license, not his. And he says, you want lunch, so that's a bribe. It has institutionalized itself in this traffic law fraternity. In fact, to a point that traffic officers that are on the road refuse promotion to go into office. Because clearly they can't afford that kind of lifestyle that they have when they're on the road and everywhere else. But is this money for lunch that is making them refuse promotion? Something needs to happen. Something needs to give. We have to have the teeth to bite. When we find those people, we must be able to strike them off and they must never be traffic officers again. And in the main, we must also be able to send them to prison to prove a point. As we said, the issue of data to tactical planning on a daily basis. We go and have roadblocks. We ask the question, why was that roadblock there? People won't tell you. We also suspect that it's also a way of extracting bribes in a very sophisticated way. So we need to be saying, that's a roadblock. That's what it's meant for. This is what it's going to achieve. And we can be able to measure whether we have achieved that or not. In fact, when the minister talks, he keeps on saying, where are these? Every time we come only during Easter in December, and we ask how many roadblocks were manned and all those things. What is the impact of these roadblocks? No one can able to tell us because we don't have a tactical response to all these issues. And we are starting to say, you're going to tell us you want to man a roadblock. You must tell us what it is for, what it's meant to achieve, and later on report on it whether you have achieved what you wanted to achieve. We need to promote the use of technology. Now, you can't really corrupt technology. If you are at 100, the speed is 100, and you are at 140, it can't say it otherwise. And we need to deal with those issues as we move forward. But it's going to also help us eradicate the issue of corruption. We are worried that it's going to be more pronounced when people know they're going to lose their licenses. They'll be more prepared to pay a bribe than that. So we need to deal with this. Using the technological aspect of things moving forward. As we said, we need to research and set achievable, controllable, and measurable targets so that we can measure people against them. And that's part of what the National Law Enforcement Code will assist us in doing. Now, shortly, what we need is effective and sustained traffic law enforcement and traffic control in South Africa. Our view is that we are going to achieve this with the rollout of ARDS in South Africa by the end of 2010-11 financial year. And we need to provide support in building administrative capacity of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, which is our sister agency in terms of the ARDO Act. The minister has appointed the board. The board has been appointed, and also the acting registrar, as prescribed in the Act. Now, I must say, this is where, Madam Chair, we need assistance from this committee. There's resistance out there to this. People are resisting ARDO. Of course, in the main, what they then tell us is that it affects their revenue collection. Our view is that, well, if you enforce for the sake of revenue, then don't enforce at all, because it's not helping us solve the problem. In fact, what we are saying is that they must tell South Africans that they are prepared for South Africans to die so they can make money out of it, because that's all it is. We need to do this, and there are a lot of other things that must be included in the operations. We need training, we need all those things, and that's where we are lacking in terms of funding as well, moving forward. What we have done, we have used the little money that we have got from the pilots in both Gauteng and Tshwane and Johannesburg, and we have been working together with them and all the authorities to make sure that we roll out this thing in earnest. ARDO is a necessary thing in South Africa. There's no question about it. It has been there for the past 12 years as a law. And people also say we are not ready. And we are saying if they are not ready, they will never be ready. I mean, if 12 years passes and you are not ready, really, when would you ever be ready? Let's just look at a child who's a 12-year-old, about to be a teenager. Now you're talking about readiness. There can never be any form of readiness. And that's where we say we need the power to then instruct people to say, if you are going to enforce the law in South Africa, it will be done in terms of the ARDO Act and nothing else. Otherwise, we are not interested in your law enforcement. In fact, that's the reason, Madam Chair, we are coming with this national law enforcement unit. So if you don't want to do it in that area, we'll go and do it ourselves in terms of ARDO, so that we save you all those problems that you have. Of course, like any other system that is new, it will have its teething problems, but that does not mean that it's not necessary. I think it's a necessary thing for South Africa, and we need to work together to make sure that this happens. We have dedicated ourselves for reduction of road traffic offenses and accidents and incidents. The minister has set us a target of halving this by 2015, meaning each and every year we need to be cutting down at least 10% for the next 5 years. If we have to do this, we need effective and uninterrupted provincial traffic law enforcement. And for them to do that, they must also adhere to 40-60 rationing of electronic enforcement and active enforcement. This fascination with cameras must just come to an end. We need to reduce it and control it. We can't have traffic officers who behave like cameramen. It just needs to stop, and we need to actively deal with that in the rationing part of our enforcement. The declaration of provincial traffic as essential service. We are busy, the CCMA, the Committee of Essential Services, we have put this in front of them. I must say this is an area where the unions are not happy about it, and we are still engaging at that level, and we hope that we'll all come to a better sense of what South Africa deserves and move in that direction. Because our data suggests that these deaths happen usually on a weekend, usually at night, when people have knocked off, other people have just knocked off. And that can't continue like that. As we said, said, the establishment of the National Law Enforcement Unit and the adoption of the Law Enforcement Code. Now, the promotion of road safety education and communication. Chair, frankly, we are tired of telling people to arrive alive and they don't want to arrive alive. Frankly. Now, what we need to be doing, well, while they are still young, we need to participatory educational techniques program, road safety debate, scholar patrol, multimedia aspects that we have infused into the debate, into the whole road safety issue. The road safety councils that we have, professional driver programs that we are having. But what is it that we need to do when we really promote road safety education and communication in South Africa? We need to all sing from the same hymn book and understand what it means when our roads are not safe. We need to start inculcating a culture of people understanding that actually violating a traffic law is also criminal like any other thing. This thing has been reduced to a petty crime, and that's what is the problem. People think it's a petty crime. I mean, I know because I've lost a brother who was hit by a car that was driving at more than 100 in a 60 zone. And he's no more. Now the guy is roaming the street somewhere. And that's what the problem is in South Africa. And we really need to inculcate, and when we use that to look at it, our view is a simple one that says these people are not common criminals actually. They are not people that go in and out of jail and say, no, it's me and you. That go out there and think if I just accelerate above 120, that's fine. We had an engagement where someone was saying, my car cannot be at 60. It just doesn't allow it. and you just get that sense. The debates that we have in society seems to suggest that we also promote this thing. When someone tells you, I used to take 2 hours to get to Polokwane, now it's 1.5 hours. He's telling you actually that the person was speeding. Now, God forbid something could have happened to him, lose control, kill all the other people. South Africans must start to learn to understand that we are all tired of telling them and trying to save them from themselves. Because they want to kill themselves and in the process kill others. And that's what we are trying to say. We've been saying arrive alive. People just don't want to do it. And in a way, we are coming up with this. We have joined the UN Convention Chair on Make Road Safe initiative that we will be coming with. You will be seeing it. You will be popularizing that. We are going to run it with all the other side of countries, and we are going to be working together in creating that atmosphere of people understanding that it's everyone's responsibility to make our roads safe. We can't do that without a sustainable human resource capacity in the road traffic environment. I was asking the other day and saying, what qualifies our instructors at traffic training colleges as instructors, except the fact that they also spend 6 months in a traffic training college and that? Is it the right way to deal with this issue? We need to find this, and this must be in our training framework. We are now coming up to say, we don't think 6 months is enough to train these people. We are proposing a year. We need issues of ethics and that to be also inculcated in that, so that we can improve the quality of the training, so that we can have effective law enforcement practitioners on our roads. Equally, not that we want to also, there's no reason why people should take bribes, but what we want to say is at the end of the day, we also need to create a professional path for these people so that they know I become a traffic officer, this is the path, the career path that I would have if I want to move and be in this sector for a very long time, so that people can have long-term views of where they want to see themselves. So that rollout and implementation of the national traffic framework is going to come. It's going to sit in front of the shareholders committee. The road traffic information and knowledge management systems. Accurate, reliable, complete road accident information. We have tried to get what we call the road the accident recording system. But equally, we also want to go and investigate. Currently, it's about five, right? Five people have passed, or three cars have been involved in an accident, it's then that we investigate. And that's problematic for us. What we wanted to do is, we wanted to say, we want to profile this road in South Africa and say that 20, what the so-called death roads. And we want to understand what is the common cause of those accidents there. Is it the driver factor? Is it the vehicle factor? Is it the road factor? So that when we go to those areas, we start to say, in these areas, you'll be enforcing on drivers. You'll be enforcing mainly on this. Or is the issue about the infrastructure and all those things. So we need to refocus our energies towards getting more information and knowledge systems around our roads. And we need also a command center where we can sit and see what's happening on South African roads on a daily basis and what are the issues that we need to do. So we need to develop a centralized road traffic information system in South Africa. And in that regard also, we are saying the National Contraventions Register, we are trying to also develop it on the INET so that all the information is in one place and we can use it more effectively. The road infrastructure and the environment, we think this is our mandate. We are fighting with everybody else to say overloading is a traffic violation and therefore people responsible for it should be us than anyone else. And we are saying if we do targeted overloading, we know where these people overload and everywhere else. It's on provincial roads where there are no way bridges. There's been a pilot of a mobile way bridge. We are trying to also roll it out, this pilot on mobile way bridges, to help protect our provincial and municipal infrastructure. We are happy that the National Treasury has assisted us as a bit in this environment to reduce the environmental damage through the tax that they have levied. But also, our enforcement has never moved in that direction at all. And we need to start enforcing on environmental issues as we move forward. Critical to all this is our dire financial situation. Here we are bankrupt as a result of a lot of other things. Earlier alluded to, we spend more than 70% of our budget on the compensation budget, and the rest is not even enough to cover our operation. But for us to do all the things that we have shown you, we need some sort of financial injection of the shortfall. We need also focus effort to the collection of all outstanding INET transaction fees. Provinces always owe us. We never get this money from the provinces. The ARDO fees from municipalities, I'm sure members have read about the 98 million that seems to create a friction between ourselves and the city of Johannesburg as to who is entitled to it and who is not. For ARDO to be successful, it needs to be sufficiently funded. There is no way in which we are going to achieve this without the sufficient funding from National Treasury. Lastly, we propose an amendment to the RTMC Act so that it can allow us to levy an RTMC levy on these penalties of people that just decide not to arrive alive when we tell them to. We think as we move forward, that's a sustainable model that with which we are going to move. I have just given the three slides that summarizes our strategic goals, and I think members have already seen that. We have got about six of them, and they are talked to by all the things that we will be doing. And we tried to also link them, if you check where we have links, to the outcomes of the Department of Transport so that you see where we fit in to the whole mix. I hope we have done justice to what the Honorable Committee would have liked us to do. We are ready to take any questions. Thanks.
I will now open an opportunity for questions. There is a challenge with time. How is the getting through? And we will need time to have our lunch so that we don't have members collapsing. Honorable Faro, followed by Honorable Babaza, followed by Honorable De Freitas, followed by Honorable Make and Malule.
Chairperson, I'm not going to go into history, but I'm a bit concerned with the acting CEO's comment that he's wanting a mandate or something, because clearly the Act gives him that mandate. There were 10 clear, very defined functional areas which the RTMC had to operate within, of which the shareholders committee at the time, if I'm correct, took five of those and said these are what we're going to focus on to try and get the ball rolling before we can slowly but surely implement some of the other aspects of the Act. And one of the first and foremost issues which determines your future strategy, I would believe, is to reinstate and to try and find out what happened to the annual or quarterly safety reports that this house used to get tabled here and this portfolio used to get tabled. We have not seen them, to my knowledge, for the last couple of years, and yet that was a clear, defined function of the RTMC. Because if you don't know where people are dying and you don't know where people are getting injured, then you cannot clearly have any strategy which will try to act against those particular happenings, be it the Arrive Alive campaign or whatever campaign you put into practice. You will not be able to do that until we can get accurate and very well determined figures. Now, that's not reinventing a wheel. My understanding is that system was in place, and I don't know why we can't reinstate it or have that information faster. That's my first point. The second thing is that as far as our ARTA is concerned, there were two pilot projects that were introduced, one in China and one in Johannesburg. This portfolio committee has not seen sight of that as to how successful it was, or for that matter, what the problems were that you faced during the process of that particular pilot project. I have insight into that, which I don't want to reveal here. But clearly, unless the eNATIS system is operational in a sense that it can actually provide accurate figures and determine whether someone's demerits can be deducted or added or subtracted, the system is bound for failure. Now, we have not heard what in fact is taking place about that, because the contract for eNATIS actually expired on the 31st of May 2007. We are now running that thing on a month-to-month basis. The intention was for this thing to be transferred over to the RTMC on the basis of a renewed contract, and it has still not happened. And really, at the end of the day, one wonders now, how do you expect to become effective under those systems? The other thing I wanted to find out from you, in terms of your presentation, which I must add is a little bit, to me, in terms of the turnaround plan, not very focused at all. It's not focused at all. It's scattered. It gives you, dealing with this matter here, another one here, you want to set up new structures to try and look at how we should coordinate road traffic infringement and enforcement. And yet you've got every municipality down there got their own cops. You have every metro have their own cops and literally every province. And the coordinating function of the RTMC through the shareholders committee, that is why there's a shareholders committee, to bring together those agencies to ensure that they all talk with one breath and they're actually reading off the same hymn book, then makes a lot of sense to me. And until we can go and try and convince those municipalities that you are going to do that role through ARTA and take away their law enforcement roles, which in fact sometimes in some of the smaller municipalities and metros actually contributes to their salaries, you're going to have a hell of a hard task to convince us to be able to do that. Because at the end of the day, what do we want? We want to see visible policing on our roads, which are going to take, in effect, and reduce the number of these particular these accidents. And dedicated courts, Madam Chair, is not a competency of this department. I don't know whether the Department of Justice has been consulted on this matter, but I would imagine that is where you need to go and get and say, well, what are you going to do about this? You know, our court roles are tied up with road accident cases. If you go to every court here and you look at the roles there, there's something like 200-300 cases that are sitting there waiting. Now you want a court that is going to take and deal with these sort of these dedicated courts to deal with infringements on traffic, I think is another issue. But I'm going to leave it there. And I just want, again, without going into history, get some reassurance from the acting CEO that the task team that undertook the, that was implemented by that, by the minister to actually investigate the goings on there, has now gone through it. We are waiting for that report to be tabled. Whether there's any action he can report on in terms of how he's dealing with those matters where there was clear corruption and misappropriation of funds in that place. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jefferson. I wanted to suggest further, when you spoke about introducing some educational programs, especially in high schools and so on, but also suggest that you extend your educational program to the public, particularly on the question of removing the road sign or changing the road sign, because that is part of the problem, and I think you alluded to that. But it is going to be critical to also ensure that the public does not add to the problem by removing the road sign. Well, when you spoke of road sign maintenance, I thought that part must be included as well. But secondly, something has got to be done about the corruption that goes on in, the learner driving or learner training, institutions or agencies or facilities, because they are more independent, that they don't belong to any thing. And perhaps as part of life orientation, emphasize the point that it is wrong to go and buy a license or to bribe somebody in order to get a license quicker. That's my suggestion. But lastly, the question, where you are talking about career pathing, which you propose must be introduced, are you also thinking of establishing a performance management system similar to the public to one that exists in the public service to reward good performance. Is that what you're thinking about as well, linked to your career pathing proposal?
Thanks, Chair. May I make a suggestion that all the questions get submitted and perhaps responses be given to us in writing, because I'm just looking at the time. We may be running out. Just going through this presentation, which I find unimpressive to say the least. The first is, it starts off with exactly the same presentation that we got at the Mount Nelson, and it gives a litany of where the problems are, and it appears that in August this year, 6 months down the line, nothing appears to have been done because the same litany continues. So that it starts off by saying that they don't keep stats. Now, I'd like to know why. Why was the system changed in 1998 when the system was working effectively and efficiently, and it was all in place, and it had to then be changed suddenly out of the blue? There's no explanation as to why the stats are not available. And then the presentation goes on a few pages later. Then give us things like it's the seventh largest contributor to deaths in South Africa, and it kills 14,000 people per year, it's et cetera, et cetera. So this is from an organization that doesn't have stats. They then give us the stats. Response is that it comes from other sources. So which are the other sources? And why is it that when some sources attempt to actually assist the RTNC with providing this information, they're told, they're disregarded and told that they don't need the help? Then the most shocking for me in this presentation is that the RTNC, the acting CEO of the RTNC, doesn't know what his mandate is. When it's clear and unambiguous in an act, which was passed in this House 10 years ago. I think it's shocking that a CEO of an entity doesn't know what he's supposed to do, and he admits it in writing in a presentation. So perhaps he should go and actually read the act which actually formed this entity in the first place to actually be able to do his job. There's a whole lot of, I mean, there are just so many questions, but my mind boggles. The first, the main things I want to talk about is the instructors, which I've mentioned, which are highly underqualified in South Africa, and that needs to be addressed, certainly. The whole system and the whole way it works. There's nothing wrong with the K53. If it is implemented, it would work. So perhaps it should be implemented. And the other thing is has there been any kind of study to find out what is going on the ground as far as traffic officers in the various provinces and the various municipalities, and what is actually needed, and where are the shortfalls, where are the deficiencies? It appears that this organization hasn't even done its basics to find out where are we in the organization. It's asking for more money, it's asking to do additional things, and it can't even do its bread and butter activities on a daily basis. So I think the RTNC is in big trouble. I'm not even talking about the corruption and all the other things that have burdened it. I'm talking about real operations on a daily basis. I think this RTNC, Madam Chair, is in deep trouble, and I'm proposing that it come back after a certain time to actually tell us what concretely it's actually doing, to actually just do its basics without having to go and do anything special, just to do its very basics. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Just one or two questions. The first one will be about the mandate. Is the question here the acting CEO asking for an extension of the mandate? For instance, he said something about road safety engineering, or they can't do anything about it. Is it because it's not part of their mandate, and do they want an extension to their amendment to their mandate, which will mean some sort of an amendment to the current act, or what actually is he asking for when he says clarity of the mandate? The second question would be, that would be maybe for my own understanding, the methodology of 7 days or 30 days.
I don't have an idea. I didn't do my homework in relation to that. The third question is the occurrence of fraud and corruption. It would be very interesting to understand how the agency or the institution plans to do about that. Because I'm just thinking, or if I'm stopped by a traffic officer for speed, and he or she shows me, or no, your fine will be 2,800. And then she instead says, if you give me 100 rands, then it's fine. In real life, it would be very stupid to prefer to pay 2,800 than a mere 100 rands. So it would be interesting to how do you intend to do that? Because that will keep on happening if we don't do anything about it. Yeah, I think I'll just stop there. Thank you.
I don't know whether we have time, I don't think so, to actually go through all the questions raised. But there is also a follow-up suggestion that has been proposed by honorable defenders to say that maybe we need to further engage with the RTMC. From my side, I'm happy to say this because RTMC was here when the cross-border traffic was presented, because we would also want to do a cross-pollination to enable all the entities to actually have a way of approaching issues rather than creating a competition. What happened with the cross-border road traffic agency was that they reflected on the mandate, why they were put in place and what informed that. They traced that back. They then analyzed the problems that made them not to achieve the mandate. They then went and developed a turnaround strategy that speaks to the mandate and also tries to address the problems. Then they developed a plan. When I look at this document, even on the issues that are raised as challenges and also as causes, when you then move forward to look at the interventions proposed, you are not able to marry which intervention speaks to which challenge, and which intervention also speaks to which cause of the problem. That is what I have identified as a missing link. But also, you also observed during the presentation that there was equal participation. The CEO was able to deal with the strategy as a person who would be leading the implementation of that strategy. And the board member was able to actually claim ownership of the strategy to say, this is the vision of the board, informed by a clear understanding of the mandate, and this strategy speaks to the vision. A vision is what the change that we would want to see at the end of the day. When we have implemented this turnaround strategy, this is the change that we will see. And they were able to take us along with them, which is why the comments and the questions were actually related to the strategy and the expected end result as a result of implementing, having implemented the strategy. And then the resources were linked to the vision and the implementation of the strategy. So, seated here as a chairperson, I know, and even the chairperson that would follow after I am gone, the kind of a legacy report in terms of the CBRTA would so much clear that there will be no doubt in understanding where CBRTA comes from and where CBR is going to and how they should be measuring the progress that is being made and the impact. In terms of this, a board member inquired. Not a board member. You don't have a board, okay. That is the problem. A problem, Guti, ERTMC does not have a governing structure. So, a vision, a turnaround strategy. Ushuti, a CEO, a management is mandating itself. Ushuti, now this is what we will do. Department, I'm now talking to you. Can you identify that? The management is giving itself the mandate, which means the management will evaluate itself. So the management in RTMC is a referee and a player. And therefore, it becomes a problem for any organization to move beyond the challenges if you are not able to separate the role of the board from the role of the management. And also, if you are not able to have a shared vision, because the people that are going to be implementing are people that should share the same vision as the people that are putting in place a strategy and the milestones that need to be achieved. Now, we can't crucify Labantabala because it is not a CEO that puts a board in place. It is not the CEO that puts a board in place. It is the department and the role of the minister. So, Kuchwan Ingola, ihamba ngaphambi kwehashe. We're supposed to be having the horse, which is the board. Then game over, ulandele inqola. But we are presented with a situation where we have to interact with inqola kungekho ihashe phambili. Nyabona department. That then brings us to the same question that we asked in the past, Uchi. If in this department, the branch that deals with the public entities oversight is alive and wide awake, if we still have the same person leading in that department, has there been a change of heart? Now, so we are going to imagine which part is Tuleli Rosal. And that is the question that we asked, whether you are singing to us, umthandazi wasemaRomeni, okushiwo into eyodwa noma isituation seyishintshile, bazosho into eyodwa, babala irosari, babale lezinto ezilayo. Noma ngaze kube kade yadlula isituation okwakhiwe ngayo irosari, basathandaza lona nanamhlanje. So i-problem ayikho kula, ilaphaya. The problem is with the department on this particular issue. It is not settled with the locals. Kulungile baba, ngizokunikeza ukuthi uphendule. But i-department okumele isitele kahle ukuthi is the RTMC structured differently from other entities now? And mase besitele lokho futhi, basitele ukuthi i-RTMC i-relate kanjani with other spheres, because we are born with the RTMC ihlezi says phezulu, but kunama provincial traffic officers and kunama local traffic officers. Until you make us understand that, we will not even understand how does this, what you are proposing, relate to that. Ungakaphendu nje wena baba, i-department of ministry lokho.
With regard to the board, as you were, the minister terminated the board early in the year. What has happened is that at the shareholders committee meeting between the minister as the chair and the MECs or the provinces of transport are the members of the shareholders committee. In April this year, chairperson, the minister was of the opinion that members of the committee would review the position and indicate whether a new board should be appointed or not. But subsequently, due to the minister's commitments in the last few months, he couldn't get the shareholders committee meeting together with the MECs. And chairperson, you need a two-thirds majority of the MECs from the provinces together with the minister have a decision taken on whether we need to have a board or the function should be decided with the shareholders committee. So what has happened is that we are urgently requesting a shareholders committee meeting in the next few weeks, so a number of these issues can be resolved, including the board issue. It was rather unfortunate that the minister terminated the services of the board, of the previous board, and which was dysfunctional, and they had a whole lot of problems that came out from that area. So, chairperson, in the next few weeks we will have that meeting, and from that meeting, a whole lot of issues would be put on the agenda. And no, I agree with you, chairperson. They are what you've said or highlighted. I agree.
It would have helped us a lot, Mr. Pile, if before the presentation was made to us, you highlighted that to us. Because a number of questions that are raised are related to the presentation, which was supposed to be presented after you had clarified all those issues. Pella, when you come here as a department, you are not accompanying them. You are coming here to play your own role and explain your involvement and where we are in terms of the performance of that entity and how the minister is responding to that, so that when this presentation is made, it is and we understand the corrective measures that are being put. But now, you sat there and kept quiet and allowed the CEO, the acting CEO, to present a presentation that we cannot, in our mind, relate to, because there is a vacuum, there is a missing information. I don't know whether you get me. Yeah. Ukuthi ibhaleni iresearcher. It's another issue. Tina Bizewa and Allah uhlezi lana. It's the department that accounts to us, not the research. So Tina, we want you to play your role in front of us. So in future, if we have invited you together with an entity that is in ICU, you must first explain whether there are doctors in the ICU who are assisting that entity to actually come out of the ICU.
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Chair, just a follow-up on the response from Mr. Pillay. I don't know whether establishing a board is optional or it's a legislated matter, because if you're saying you're waiting for the shareholders' meeting to take a decision, is it a choice? If they say they don't want the board, why the legislation said there should be a board? Maybe a clarity so that we move on the same understanding is, because if before establishing a board, a certain structure must take a decision, what does the legislation say?
Chairperson, yes, I agree with the Honourable Member that the legislation indicates that there should be a board. But because of the problems that has happened with the previous board, there was a review position. So at the Shareholders Committee meeting, that's going to come up, we'll put it to the Shareholders Committee and the Minister to say that what are the advantages of having a board in place, so that they can actually take responsibility for the running of the organization and being the accounting authority. Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I don't understand, because all entities have boards. So what is different with this one? Thank you, Chair.
And I think part of what we could offer to do is come and do a presentation on our act. Hence, I'm saying, people keep on saying we have a mandate. We really don't know what our mandate is except coordination. Now, the act says the shareholding committee may appoint a board. They may not appoint a board. So in the previous shareholders committee meeting, they decided not to appoint a board. So they have a choice. Right.
The parliament and I'm trying to we don't talk and make assumptions or say we think. This is parliament, we make laws here. And we also over monitor and evaluate the implementation of those laws. Now, Mr. Pillay has just spoken much. Singavulela even is in this record as Ngazulan. Uthi shareholders have not taken a decision. Or acting CEO, Uti, by taking a decision, Uti, they will not appoint a board. Mother Itata, their own decision, like when they took that decision, they overlook Uti, go account on a parliament. We don't have that information here. And Nango, Mr. Pillay, you represent the department. He doesn't say so to us. It is the CEO that is saying so to us. That the shareholders have taken a decision of not appointing a board at the previous meeting. Mr. Pillay, now you corner the Wule meeting. He actually go Kulume, Mr. Pillay, Wakuluma, Ungwenya Mabila, was a Kuluma way. Mr. Pillay, before you spoke, said they have not taken a decision. They are still deliberating on that. Now we are seated here, charged with the responsibility of holding both the department and the entities accountable in terms of the implementation of the laws that we pass here, and also in terms of executing your mandates. What is there to guide us if a department seated under one roof in one meeting gives us a statement that is contrary to the statement that is given to us by the CEO? One meeting, one roof.
There might be when the meeting happened, Chair, the department had brought names of potential board members. At the third meeting, the shareholders, being the MECs of transport and the minister, decided on that meeting not to appoint the board. Now, that does not mean that going forward they were not going to appoint the board. They were saying they want to apply their mind because the Act says they may appoint and may not appoint the board. In fact, what then happened is that some of the MECs were saying, maybe we don't need to appoint the board anymore given what has happened. Others were saying, let's apply our mind and see whether it's necessary for us to have a board going forward. So that's what happened. On that meeting, they decided not to appoint the board.
We want the minister to come and clarify this. So that we will be able to execute our mandate based on the correct information and the full understanding of what is happening. Jengamanje, we are more confused by what you are telling us. Because the impression that you created was that Utwena, the Act says they may appoint or may not appoint. And you then follow that by a statement that says they decided not to appoint. That's what you say. Upile Uti, they deferred the decision of appointing.
Yes, Chair.
You are saying so. Saying the shareholders deferred the decision of appointing.
Chair, they want to apply their minds, as Mr. Letswalo said. When we say when I meant deferred, I meant to apply their minds, Chairperson.
Now, I'm a very good listener. I listen very, very well. Decision not to appoint and deferring a decision are two different things. CEO, you started by saying the shareholders decided not to appoint. And you even qualified that the Act says they may and may not. And then you said they decided not to appoint. The impression given is that there will no longer be a board because the decision is. That is, I'm saying how I understood you, what I understood you to be saying. You may not, maybe that is not the message you were sending to me, but that is the message I received. Because you must remember, there is a sender of the message and a receiver of the message. The message that you were sending
was maybe not intended, is not what I interpreted your message to be saying. But what also assisted me to interpret that message like that is that you said the provisions of the Act is that the shareholders may appoint L, may not appoint. Then you said they decided not to appoint. You did not say they deferred the decision and said they were going to apply their mind. It is only when I was saying, the two of you are saying two different things. Pillay is saying they have not taken a decision and you are saying they have taken a decision. It is only then that you said, some of them were saying, given the problem, let us not appoint, and some of them were said, let us go and apply our minds. That is not them taking a decision not to appoint a board. They deferred the decision of appointing a board. Yes, one of my. They deferred the decision. So let us not move out of this meeting with an understanding that the shareholders have taken the decision not to appoint the board. The shareholders have not taken that decision. They have deferred the decision. Okay. And so now the problem that we have is that we are presented with a strategic plan and an intervention that we are not sure whether it has been developed by the shareholders for it to be implemented by the management. Or we are presented with an intervention strategy that has been developed by the management. And the minister is the one to actually respond to the questions that we have. That's my guess, right? Kaba baguzu kusizo pendula le mibuzo ngoba fanele siqale seqe le bridge. It's not going to help us to respond to the question. We must first cross the bridge that answers the question 80. Whose strategy is this? Is this a strategy of the shareholders? And then you are going to implement it as the management, or it is the strategy of the management mandating itself to implement. Because there is a difference between governance and administration. Management cannot on its own develop a strategy. Management is mandated by a governance body to implement a strategy. Separation of functions and powers. This matter is closed because we cannot interact with a strategy that we do not know who developed it. Is it the shareholders that developed it, the strategy, or the management? And if the strategy is developed by the management, then there is a confusion in terms of powers and functions because a strategy should be developed as a shared vision between governance and management. But management only has the responsibility of implementing the strategy. But a governance body is the one that is responsible for developing the strategy and the vision. Very, very clear. Because if the management develops its own strategy, the management is actually the referee and the player. If both each other, the management would say, this is where this organization is going. Are we on the same wavelength? yeah, direction RTMC requires all minister, no DJ, to come and give a report to the portfolio committee. What is it that has happened? What is the future direction? And then, after that, will we then be able to deal with a strategic turnaround, a turnaround strategy followed by the implementation plan that will be developed by the management? Thanks. Now we are late. We're supposed to deal with the draft report. Challenge that we have is that the House Chairperson met with me, and then we are required to debate the report on the study tour to China before we break for the recess. We have not processed the draft that we have. Honorable Fa.
Got it this morning, so I went through it. There's a couple of just minor errors in terms of language. Can I just give that straight to Denia and let her have a look at it? Words missing here and there, and it's just semantic, not changing the report. So it's just really dealing with the corrections of those.
I think what you're asking is the challenge of time and trying to deal with the report and so forth. I'd like to suggest that perhaps if you would, that we were to get permission from the speaker, that we be excused from a sitting sometime, and we can then deal with these outstanding matters. I know it's an unusual situation, but we just don't have the time. And if we've got to debate this in the House, that perhaps we get permission from the speaker that we can be permitted to leave at a certain day. Just the committee I'm talking about. Possibly, maybe even just the members that were on the tour. I don't know. Before it goes in. And then also what I'd like to, while I've got the floor, maybe, is also to just, we also need to find a time then to do a follow-up on this RTMC issue. Thank you.
Honourable Bell. Chair, I was going to align myself with Honourable Farrow to say, we can make our submissions because, to be honest, points that need to be corrected are not major. We can just make those corrections even later today and make submission electronically to the NEO and then take it from there.
I was also going to make that kind of a proposal to say I have made my own corrections, which I will be submitting to Dineo to fine-tune. And then next week we are having a joint meeting with the committee of education. If we can then request that we be allowed on that day to have 30 minutes just as transport to go through the report and then adopt it so that it can then get into the programming to allocate us with a date on which we will be debating. And also in that meeting, identify the people that would be speaking when we debate. And by that time, next week on Tuesday, we would also have established as to how many people are expected to speak so that when we meet, we can then divide ourselves in terms of the time allocated to us to speak, to debate the report. Agreed to. So, summary, we make submissions today to Dineo and tomorrow. Dineo processes that it gets back to members of the portfolio committee latest by Thursday, you look at that. On Tuesday, we allocate 30 minutes just to the Portfolio Committee on Transport, away from the joint meeting with education. We process that and also identify people that will be speaking. Thank you. That brings us to the end of this meeting. Declare the meeting closed.
Yeah.